So we have here, Mr. Chairman, six countries, seven, because Portugal is also
present.
Is also here. We have Sweden, we have Spain, we have Germany, we have Italy, we have Ireland, and we have Greece. Yes. Brendan O'Dwyer is, I am speaking about him in particular, because he is the general coordinator of this group. This group comes from the Comenius projects that are organized because of the European Union and the fundings of the European Union. We have joined not only because some of us have already met with former projects, and our intentions are this school year and the next one to study landmarks and monuments. Inside, between commas, inside the monuments, we would like also to have a glimpse on the institutional monuments and parliamentary ones. That's why we have asked for coming here to visit the National Parliament and to be received, if possible, by yourself, which we appreciate and thank you very much for that. We are all teachers of primary schools or pre-secondary schools. Some of the schools are larger than the others, but I think that in a general way, we could say that among these six schools, we have over 1,500 pupils involved, more than 1,500 pupils involved. So we are going to work in almost
1,500 and a half.
Much more than that. Yeah. We are about to study or try to study the theme of the monuments across all the curricula, not only about history or geography, but also through art, music, drama, ITC, and so on. So this is the reason why we have joined. We want to be together because we are in a new dimension of our lives. That is to say, we are in a new Europe, and we teachers think that when we met and when we are with our children and make our children aware that everywhere they can have friends, we are making a small contribution to peace. So this is also one of the most main goals, to improve friendship, not only among the teachers, but also making the kids aware that the classroom does not finish on the door. It may be open and spread 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 kilometers away. And it's very easy because they communicate with them through Skype and other technologies. So in general, I think this is the main goals of our project. We have already, some of us have already participated in former projects. Last year, for instance, some of us participated in a project about the water sustainability. And we did the same work, everybody together, studying a specific thing. So we are here not only to make you aware of this reality that you already know, of course, through the national agency, the agency for the Agency para Aprendizagem ao Longo da Vida. We are here also to say that there are Portuguese schools involved in a European dimension. That's it. I don't know if Brendan wants to say something to our chairman.
I will just. Carlos spoke very eloquently and articulately about the project, so I will just like to say we are very honoured to be here in your parliament today, and we thank you for giving us your time to be here with us. It is a great honour for us. Thank you very much.
Okay. So now it's my turn. Okay. Thank you so much for the presentation. And I'm glad to welcome you here in our parliament and in one of the rooms where our committee usually meets. And to start with, so good morning, guten Morgen, buenos dias, buongiorno, kalimera in Swedish. How do they say good morning in Swedish? Huh? Good morning. Okay. And bon dia. And that's it. Now we'll continue in English, because that's so far as I can go in Greece. In Greece, I also say "Efgaristo," and that's it in Greek. Okay. So I'm not quite familiar with Comenius program. I came across with some experiences, visiting schools. I know there are occasionally some visiting groups. But I think it's a very interesting experience. So to bring the sense of sharing the our European community values and knowledge at such an early age of children and in schools, and to find ways to communicate and to show that the school is not just a classroom, but a window open for the future and the community and the world. That's very important. So I think the best way to conduct our the time we have, almost 1 hour, is to be here and to try to answer to your questions. I'm sure you understand what we do in a parliament. It's not different from what happens in the parliaments in our countries. What we do in a committee, so we prepare the plenary meetings, we watch on the government. This afternoon we'll have a meeting with the minister, because we are in the midst of the budget discussion, and today we'll have a joint meeting with the financial committee to analyze the budget in the sector of education and science, and that's what we do. So parliamentary life, it's quite similar in our democratic countries, but I'm glad to answer or try to answer to the questions you have, and also during our conversation to understand more of the details of the program and exactly in the project in which you are engaged now regarding the monuments. Okay, so please feel free to ask the questions, and the Professor Carlos Trincão will conduct the meeting. So I'm not sharing here. He's in the share. Okay, thank you.
Okay, everybody has the word. What we are entitled to do from now on is to make every possible question that you want to pose or to our chairman of the education. I could start only for asking how often does the education committee meets per year, in ordinary meetings or extraordinary meetings? Just for us to have a glimpse how does the work functions, not only on the plenary sessions, in which, as you all know, discuss the general problems of the country, but here, when we discuss specifically what happens to education, what happens to schools, and so on. And then, if you want to share some experiences about your own countries and making a kind of a comparison to what happens here in Portugal, you are very welcome to that.
Okay. So we have a normal weekly schedule. So our Mondays are to contact our constituents. So it's constituency day on Mondays. On Tuesdays and Wednesday mornings is committee meetings. And on Wednesdays afternoon, Thursdays afternoons, and Friday mornings is plenary discussions and debates and votes. The votes occur usually at noon every Friday. On Thursday's morning is for parliamentary groups to meet. That's the normal weekly schedule. Currently, we are in a different schedule because during these months we are discussing the budget and we are concentrating around the budget. But that's the usual, the way you organize our work. This committee, the Education, Science and Culture Committee, meets regularly every Tuesday afternoon. So the regular meetings of our committee are on Tuesday's afternoon. But as we have a big workload, you usually often, almost every week, we need a second ordinary meeting on Wednesday morning. So the predominant pattern of our work is we meet on Tuesday's afternoon and additionally on Wednesday mornings, because we have got to deal education, science, culture, youth, and sports. This is the five areas we have we are in charge. We watch over three members of government. So the Minister of Education and the Secretaries of State of their area, that area, so education and science, the Secretary of State of Culture, and the Secretary of State of Youth and Sports, and the respective minister, who has other areas to take care. And we have to, according to the rules of the parliament, we, in our, when watching the government performance, we have four meetings per year, according to the rules. So 12 weeks, or we have 12 meetings with our members of government every parliamentary year, which we discuss the calendar at the beginning of each parliamentary session. Besides that, of course, we can have meetings with any minister or secretary of state when a parliamentary group asks for him or her to come here and the committee approves. So when, and of course, their position often takes that initiative, but not always the majority approves. But so besides these 12 meetings, we have more meetings with the government whenever there's a specific request from he, for him or her to come here to give account on some scandal or some matter or something that created a fuss in public opinion, and we need to discuss. Besides that, of course, we prepare the legislative work regarding the plenary, so we can debate resolutions or draft legislation that is initiated by either by the members of parliament or the government. And once they are approved in the plenary, we discuss the article by article, so the specificities, what you call the specialty.
Special problems.
Yes, so we adjust the final text of the law that is passed in the plenary. We have other discussions on other issues than anyone can raise, and of course we receive people that wanted to present their problems. So we have auditions or audiences, which, if it's very important matters or very important organizations like trade unions, or we receive them usually in the plenary of the committee. But there are many requests, so we organize what we call a monitor MP, so a sort of So we have lots of people that want, and we nominate one of our members to receive them, and it's an open meeting to others that want to attend. And then there's a report of that meeting that it's distributed for us too. So this is a practical way to enlarge the our capacity to receive more inputs in our work. And I think, we organized, we don't have subcommittees. We could create subcommittees, but there's a general guidance in our parliament not to organize subcommittees, so we try to avoid it. There's only one subcommittee. We have currently 12 permanent committees currently, and only one subcommittee is on gender equality on the first committee. That's the only issue. So there was an idea of creating a subcommittee for science, or a subcommittee for sports, or a subcommittee for culture. But there's a guidance against it. So we organize working groups on some matters. There's a working group on sports. There's a working group on special education, so it has to deal with handicapped children or children with disabilities. So that's what we call special education. I don't know if you use it.
Special needs,
yes. And there's a huge need there to involve people, to discuss with people, because it's a very important part of our parliamentary job. Then we have a working group on curriculum, a working group of what we call the Youth Parliament. I'll finish with that. A working group on Guimarães, European Cultural Capital, and Braga, European Capital in 2012. And I think that's it. And we have a rapporteur on science, to follow specifically the issues on science. We don't have a working group, but one member that was appointed is a permanent rapporteur on science. So if there's a need to push for something, she's in charge of it and takes initiative. We also organize, besides these permanent activity, some hearings. For instance, we'll have an hearing next week on an area of organization of schools, what you call STAPE, what do you call it?
Brandon's school belongs to something like that.
Okay.
Special territories for special intervention.
So we have an hearing with the directors of those territories to discuss the way things are functioning. And we have others, and we also organize seminars or colloquium to have open discussions with civil society on some matters. So we take some initiatives to open a little bit the parliament to the public and exchange views. And I think that's
for now.
Yeah.
So, does anyone want?
Okay. Are all members of the committee members of parliament, or do you have technical experts also?
Another question there.
Okay.
I'm following the protocol. Two or three questions.
Yeah, anyway. It's better. It's better.
Since
it's
you
better.
Gave me the chair.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think you asked what we have to learn in primary school. In high school.
The foreign languages.
Foreign languages. Okay. Only in foreign languages.
Except
We traditionally we started to learn foreign language in fifth grade. So when children were aged 9 years old. So when we start what you call the second cycle of basic education, that's the most traditional system. And but now we developed an early learning of English starting on first grade. I don't know. Well, it's an experience that still is under implementation, but it has already 5-6 years in the field. Since 2006. So currently we start learning. When I was a young boy, I started learning French. Wasn't our first language, and we have 5 years of French, and then 3 years of English, until the ninth grade. And then those who followed for university, of course, they had different choices. If they went to Greek, they could, not the modern Greek, but the old Greek, if they want to, and Latin, if they want to some philosophy or history, they had to learn that language. German, if they went to law, as it was my case. And of course, English or French, depending on the career. Then the system evolved to start with English. So we started to have many years ago, 20 years ago, first English and then the second language, which was first compulsory French and then a language of choice. And Spanish comes across as a frequent choice. And so there's a decrease of the learning of French, and I think it's very difficult for youngsters to learn French in the current system, because they refuse.
It's easier.
Okay. I think it was easier when we learned first French and then English, and then today, when they learn English, that's what I guess from my own experience. And my children, and they understand English is easy, they understand the need to understand, and then, well, French is a boredom, why have I got to learn French? Nobody speaks French. And so the evolution was to predominantly English, and now reinforced with the teaching of English since primary school. As according to budget, well, it's going down because of austerity, but I think in the next budget it will still be 5% GDP. But it went up to 7% GDP, I believe, in 2008. But of course, we are under austerity, under cuts, and education is also suffering some cuts.
And Brendan has asked about some technical advice to the committee.
Ah, yes. We have some technical experts with the committee. The two of them are here. Very competent people indeed. And it's a very good asset we have in this committee. Very experienced staff, so far. And they prepare and organize everything we put in motion, and then each parliamentary group has their staff, and they organize as they wish to organize, and the resources they have to follow all the committees in parliament and parliamentary work. But they have at least one staff member per group, and the larger groups more than one, because moreover, we deal with different matters. So it's not only education, it's sports, which is a specificity in terms also in terms of political clients, and science, which is very, very specific, and culture, which is also very specific. So the staff is provided for by the parliamentary groups to support their own members in the committee.
Just one information about the English in primary schools. I myself am a primary school teacher, and what our chairman was telling you about was about this experience that has 6-7 years. So after classes, or before classes, according to the normal schedule of the kids, we can have in Portugal 3 different timetables for primary schools. We are tending to a normal timetable, that is to say from 9 to 12, and then break to lunch, and then from 1:30 to 3:30. But there are still some schools where we have classes from 8 to 1 p.m., and then in the same room, we have from 1:15 to 6:15. Actually, in my school, we have the three examples. So tomorrow you'll notice that. But so what happens is after the classes, or before, if the kids have only classes in the afternoon, they have now what is so-called some extra, it's not extracurricular activities, but curricular activities in a more pleasant way. We have physical education. We can have robotics in some municipalities. We can have computers. We can have music, because those areas, and you have English, and those areas, because we are polyvalent teachers. So some of us do not know how to think very well. So that is a problem. So what has been implemented some years ago was after school, 2 hours per day of several activities. And one of them is English. The question is that these activities are not compulsory. So only the kids or the parents who want those activities, they have access to those activities. So we can have a class with 20 pupils or 22 or 24, and then only 17 benefit from that. Because for the time being, that is optional to have that initiation, in this case, to English at primary school. From Italy and Sweden again.
My question is a bit more political.
You can press the button.
Sorry?
You may press the button.
Very serious. All right. Thank you.
Everything is going to be recorded.
Well, now I want to ask a question to the chairman of the committee, because I want to take this opportunity to speak to such an important figure in the field of education. And when I think of education, I think of two examples. The only examples I have are Finland and Italy, because I come from Italy. And I saw that in Finland, majority and opposition, they normally work jointly in the direction of building a good education system. And it seems, maybe I'm wrong, it seems that it works very well. In Italy, it's the other way around. Usually, majority and opposition, they use education as a farther field for divisions. And this makes our system work very badly. So I am really curious to know how majority and opposition work in Portugal. It would be nice, maybe I can bring with me some suggestions for our politicians.
Jan.
Well, coming to the first question, it has varied according to the years. The framework law that ruled the educational system was passed some 25 years ago or more, there was a big concerned about the consensual, because everybody understands, at least the mainstream parties, not the extreme parties, but the mainstream parties, that the political education, the policy on education is for a generation, not for a political cycle. And so we need to have a broad agreement on main guidelines. And I would say that on the basic questions there was a huge consensus in that development of the system. So to democratize the education, to increase the access of youngsters to education, and to invest more in education. So it was the romance years with education. Now, in this century, and the education is under tremendous pressure to reform. And so it has become more a battleground. It was already like that when the socialist government was in function, so with Prime Minister Socrates. There was a very controversial minister that initiated many reforms regarding many of the teachers that raised a lot of fuss and conflicts, and of course the opposition tried to benefit from it. That's part of political gain. And now it's also tough because we are under financial pressure. We need to, as the minister says, to do more with less resources. That's the general line. I'm sure many of you are familiar in Greece, in Italy, in other countries. There's the general climate in Europe. We have got to cut public spending. And of course, this puts up a lot of stress and pressure on the system. And the opposition does want to share the pains of the government. So, and they criticize some very realistic, others with a little bit of demagogy. But that's part of the game. So it's very difficult to engage currently parties from the government and opposition to share tasks in education. The government now started a debate which we need for years, so the reformation of the state and of the function of the state, that of course will be a huge debate regarding not only the social areas, health, education, social security, but also the more traditional areas like justice, security, territorial administration. And let's see how it evolves, but it didn't start very well. It would be good that we could build a common ground, because that's a huge need of the country for the future. But let's see how it evolves. In the ground, in spite of the financial difficulties, my judgment is that in the schools, is that the climate is better than it was 5 or 6 years ago. Because the reforms settled down, I don't know, but I think there's no... 6 years ago, when that minister started these reforms regarding the teacher, there was a huge eruption of revolt in the teachers, and that, of course, affected the climate in the schools. But then it finally settled down, and there were some changes in the reforms, and things got a little bit calmer. But now, of course, there's the financial stress, and that's a huge pressure on people, be it on universities or polytechnical schools or secondary schools or basic schools, where you cut the budget and you tell the managers, oh, I've got to do something or more with less resources. That's a problem, but okay. The other question was the basic issue. Well, the basic issue is this one: to do more with less. Well, and to find the ways of not affecting the educational performance, in spite of having to reform the financing of the system. Well, I believe that education is the deals with the basic resource of the country. We don't have oil, we don't have gold, we don't have diamonds. Our oil, our gold, our diamonds are our kids, our children. And of course, we have got to prepare them better and better, be it to find a good job and have a stable life in our country or in Europe. So Europe is not abroad anymore, so it's a community. And they have got to be prepared to find, to benefit from the open employment markets in Europe. So we, and that's the biggest challenge for the minister, to work with the people that are in the system. First, that they do not demoralize, that they do not give up in spite of working in very stressful situations, and you are able to find some ways to do more with less. Second issue, we need to solve a problem of balancing public school and private schools. There's a permanent discussion here, and that this is also an ideological issue, the way we view do we want to impose a single monopoly of state education, or we have a comprehensive system that encompasses community schools, social initiative schools, private schools, and how do we balance the competition between them? Because of course the public education is free, and there's a problem that private schools, because they charge tuitions, become not only schools only for rich people, but very rich people, very, very, very rich people. So we need to balance, and here between the center and right and the left, this is a very political issue. We just was published 1 year, a week ago, a report from the Court of Auditors with the average cost of a pupil, of a student, in private schools and public schools, for us to balance the. And so it's an ongoing discussion. And I personally, that's my personal belief, I'm from center-right, my background, I'm a Christian Democrat, so I'm in favor of a comprehensive system. I don't think that that's my view. I think the state has the responsibility to provide schools and education for everybody, but not only by state schools, by whatever school, kind of schools, and that's a part of the freedom to choose. So the parents may have we have got to increase the possibility of parents to choose the best school for their children. As far as